Your time and expertise are valuable, making Focus one of the most important resources to have at work. These days, professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, and it can be difficult to stay on task with all the emails and documents you have to get through. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, you can stay focused and quickly get through your work with relevant real-time suggestions wherever you write. It works across 500,000 apps and websites, so it can help with everything, from brainstorming presentation ideas to sounding more confident and persuasive in emails and reports. For 15 years, Grammarly has offered best-in-class communication support and enterprise-grade security on a business model that doesn't sell your data. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
Thanks for tuning into Power Athlete Radio. If you've had a hankering for some classic training talk, including CrossFit Games prep work, Ian Daniel of Fortitude Sports Performance is here to quench that thirst. With a multi-sport background and inclination towards powerlifting, Ian took somewhat of a unique approach to prepping for the sport of fitness. His diverse background and success in lifting has made him one of the more sought-after coaches in the biz. Here it is, episode 482.
Hey, Power Athlete Nation. Welcome to another episode of the premier podcast of Strength and Conditioning, Power Athlete Radio. I'm John, CEO of Power Athlete, joined with...
Tex McQuilkin, the Director of Training and Education. Thank you for having me, John.
Well, good. I mean, we do this podcast sometimes many times a week, and I'm hoping that the intro is a lot smoother than it's been in the past.
Well, we get better with each rep, just like all of our athletes.
Our training programs. If you guys are into training and you want the world-class training experience provided by Power Athlete and myself, Mr. McQuilkin, and our team of high-end coaches, just go to powerathletehq.com/training, and you will see our flagship programs, everything from Field Strong, Grindstone, Jack Street, Johnny Wad, Johnny Bod, Lean Enable, Bedrock, and Hammer, and various other individual programs like Lean Enable, Speed Kills, and just about everything you can hope for in terms of getting flexy with Iron Flex. Mm-hmm. So we've really put together an amazing catalog of training programs to meet your needs. Everyone designed for a certain archetype. So once you get in there, explore them, smash them, try them out on Train Heroic, and let us know what you think.
Yes, and we have a little survey. If you see all of these amazing options and you want them all, we have a survey, an opportunity for you to work through according to equipment, time that you have allotted to training, and it breaks down the best training program for you.
Yeah. So if you want to find that, just go, like we said, powerathletehq.com. Scroll down, you'll see the tab on training. You can look at slash training and then obviously slash for all those different programs. So I guess we're going to do a podcast today.
Oh, we got a mountain of a podcast today.
Ooh, we got a big one, almost like a rhino of a podcast.
Yeah, I'll save that mountain pun for when we get the mountain dog on. Okay. But we still got a big fucking dude on.
Yeah, no, I mean, 5'8", 240, that ain't small. I mean, I know that's why you like your ladies.
Well, yeah, runs a 4.340. Breakdown. Ian's very cool. I didn't realize he competed in the CrossFit Games twice. He must be the second heaviest Games athlete of all time.
Dude, definitely. I think Sam Dancer was a pretty big cat, too, at that time.
Has he made it to the Games?
Yeah, he deadlifted like 600 pounds in the Games. It was pretty impressive. After like running, like a 100K sprint.
100K sprint?
Yeah, they're like, hey, CrossFit Games this year, 100K sprint. Okay, 3, 2, 1, go, and then deadlift 600 pounds for reps. Okay.
Do they know the definition of a sprint?
I don't think, what's pretty fascinating on CrossFit is some high-level sprinters came into CrossFit, some people that had been 400 and 800-meter runners in college. Mm-hmm. And I think when that happened, all of a sudden when you saw sprint stuff, these guys were so much more efficient in terms of running. When they started throwing swimming in the mix, and then all of a sudden you got like China Cho and, Colleen Fausch and some of these girls that were really high-level swimmers and came out and absolutely just crushed it in the water. I mean, if there's somebody who's, you know, got a college scholarship to go to, you know, like Berkeley or a high-end school, and that's all you did was swim, and now all of a sudden you're in CrossFit as soon as you get back in the water, just like on the sprinting stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, and do you feel that they programmed away from, like, badass individuals?
I have no idea. I haven't been, since we stopped our relationship with CrossFit, I just haven't necessarily, you know, tuned in. And, you know, when they got rid of regionals and went to this new format and this, I mean, and then also the fact that they ditched all their conventional media, I think it became, you know, I'm basically watching Arm & Hammer's, you know, Instagram feed for updates. I mean, I'll tell you, that guy's got his fucking, you know, ear to the, you know, whatever it is, for whatever's happening. But I really am excited to see what happens with CrossFit, with Eric Rosa coming in. You know, obviously that, you know, there was a big tornado and a house fell on Glassman, you know, in Kansas. You know, the Wicked Witch is dead kind of a deal. So, you know, he moved on, and I'm really excited to see what he does. Pretty fascinating, though, you know, competed in the CrossFit Games and then got out and has done powerlifting and, you know, now just kind of traveling around being jacked and, you know, helping people get more jacked.
Yeah, and Ronan, how you described him during the show, Ronan, I believe, is a great, great term. He's finding strong people all over the country and then still doing some online education through his Instagram, showing off a little bit.
Yeah.
Call you out, Ian, but don't hurt me. And still
love
dropping
me.
Some knowledge with those heavy ass lifts.
Yeah, it'd be a good one.
Yeah, fun conversation up, down, and around. So we are ready to go.
Cue it up, man. Let's do it. So what's your background? I mean, how'd you get into this thing? You said you bounced around, you worked. Like, what was your initial jump off point? Like, why are people following you?
Oh, well, I mean, shoot, I've been doing the fitnessing thing since I was about 12 years old. Team sports, done just about any sport to some decent above average degree, average to above average degree. And then it kind of culminated in me getting involved in CrossFit back in probably 2012. 3 months in, qualified for regionals as an individual, ended up going teams because I still didn't know what the hell I was doing. And that was back in the Southeast region, down in the Southeast region, of course. And from there, that kind of led to a lot of team competitions, individual competitions, a lot of local privately held competitions when those kind of exploded in that 2012 to 2016 time period. I actually graduated and got my BSN and went to work in a critical care ICU for a little while. Took about a year off to do that, to kind of like do that full time. And because you can't really push performance working the night shift so much. Shift work is not great for the energy levels. And then I came back from that, joined up with a team. We went to compete at the CrossFit Games twice. Competed in a year out in Utah for the Pro Grid League when that was a thing. And then from there, after 2017, the 2017 games in Wisconsin, I switched and transitioned to powerlifting. And over the course of about four or five powerlifting meets, went from a 1600 total to a 2001 total. Nice. 2001 total was with like a roughly, there's obviously some decimal points, but, roughly like a 788 squat, a 451 bench, and a 760 deadlift. I think it was like 760.9, whatever kilo math, the really precise kilo math comes out as. But so I've lifted in the animal cage once, done some other feats of strength, done, you know, depending on what your standards are, my deadlift has been anywhere between 760 to 850. Best squat was 788, best bench 463. You know, clean 405. I can do all that pretty regularly. I don't really train Olympic weightlifting. I can just kind of do it because I'm strong.
So, Ian, what's your Fran time?
Now, what's his Michael time? I'm only interested in Michael times.
GHD. Which one's the Michael?
I think that's like sit-ups and GHD sit-ups, or maybe it's
75,
800 huh? meter runs, GHD sit-ups, because that's the true marker of strength and performance and really eliteness.
So Shoot, man, I don't remember the last. I haven't done like a named CrossFit workout in a long time. But when I did, last time I did Grace, I did normal Grace in like 58 or 59 seconds, just doing this thing for 30 straight. Fran was probably, because I'm 5'8", but I walk anywhere between 230 to 240. Like a lean 230 to 240. Fran times probably like sub 2, like somewhere right around 2, sub 2, 158 to like 205, somewhere around there. And then, shoot, what else? I did 225 Grace and like maybe 250, somewhere around there. And I mean, man, like right now I'm not super conditioned and not like whenever I was competing, like just to kind of rewind a little bit, back just because I'll never ever be in the shape that I was for the 2017 CrossFit Games. I'll never be in that shape in my life ever again. Like that was like probably the pinnacle of conditioning, strength, stamina, all around sort of picture. And you know, 2016 when we trained and we competed, it was kind of like I was kind of like the new kid on the block to the team, and I was on Team Hustle Hard out of West Palm Beach. And it was sort of very much a traditional CrossFit approach to training. It was do more CrossFit more often, harder workouts, you know, beat you down kind of training. And, you know, I had the ability to an extent. And so I got better from it, but things also started hurting from it. I went into the 2016 games, the last year they had it in California, and you know, I had an impinging shoulder. My hip was bothered. I had hip bursitis that I had to get a cortisone shot for. And then, you know, we still did all right. We came in right around like 20th or 21st, something like that. But I wasn't happy with my own individual performance. Going into the 2017 games, I pretty much completely revamped my training, and I might take some heat for this, but in training for the 2017 CrossFit Games, I actually didn't really do CrossFit for it. Because I had a large strength surplus for like that 2017 season, I actually did a powerlifting meet between the 2016 and 2017 season. So I had an interesting gauge on my strength numbers. That was my first meet, was between those 2 years. I didn't train for it. I didn't peak for it. I didn't follow like a traditional hypertrophy strength peaking phase or anything. I had like 3 or 4 low bar squat sessions to practice the technique. And that was pretty much about it. And I just went in and did it. Just going in and doing it, I think I hit a 600 squat even, low bar and sleeves. I hit bench press, I sandbagged a little bit because I had pulled something in my pec minor. And I hit a 365 bench, just kind of like, I probably could have done 405. And my deadlift conventional was 633. But like a week after that, I tried sumo and I pulled 660. So I kind of regret not pulling sumo in that meet. I didn't really know about it. But that 2017 season, I didn't really train CrossFit. I kind of took a bit more of a focused approach to things. And instead of training everything at once, I kind of treated it how an MMA athlete might treat mixed martial arts. Instead of, you know, you take an MMA athlete, they're not necessarily training MMA. They're training all these individual disciplines. And then they're sort of tying it together in their unique style of fighting. So for me, I trained as a triathlete some days. Other days I trained as a gymnast. And then maybe one day a week, which was my fun day, I got to train like a lifter. And so in doing so, you know, and I kind of would target areas of my body that I felt like were weak, you know, instead of doing a CrossFit style workout that had a lot of like toes to bar in it with paired with something else, I said, oh, my toes to bar suck. Well, I'm going to do 3 sets of 30 strict with ankle weights, you know, and progressive overload something. It was like, oh, well, my muscle ups suck. Well, I probably need to spend about an hour, 2 to 3, 4 times a week dissecting the movement, seeing where I'm weak at, and doing everything from hollow holds to strict ring pull-ups to controlled negatives to, you know, skin the cats to training how a gymnast would to improve their muscle-ups, not necessarily pushing them so hard and under fatigue. You know, for rope climbs, my grip strength was an issue, so I would train, you know, dead hangs on the rope climbs until my hands and skin were about to fall off, you know. And then even in training, before my grip, because I was a heavier guy with like not huge, you know, gorilla hands like most guys have. So, you know, I was training rope climbs with strongman tacky on my hands to get the technique down so I could at least grab it first and start building up that musculature. And then eventually I transitioned away from strongman tacky to chalk to just bare hands and chalk. But like that 2017 season, I was running, I tested everything and I was running about a 6:20, 6:30 mile. I was doing 18 muscle ups, unbroken, you know, could clean and jerk 405, obviously had my powerlifting numbers. I was swimming, you know, 1,000 meters straight. I was rowing like a 6:42 K. And then, like 3 weeks before we competed at the games, I did like the thing that I thought was the coolest thing ever in my own mind was a 225, because I weighed about 225 at the time, 225 times 101 squat unbroken. So it took about eight and a half minutes to complete, but I did it and then I kind of fell over. So I mean, I'll never be like that.
Did the gamble work out? Like you went into 16 and then, you know, and here you kind of periodized your training and did really what you're calling is block periodization, where you're focusing on weaknesses and then moving along and kind of combining them. How did it turn out for you?
I mean, put it this way, those kind of numbers that I listed in terms of like each one of those things being where they were was like a massive improvement from the year prior. Now, who's to say we didn't get do-overs? Who's to say had I just continually done what I had been doing in 2016, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that those things still wouldn't have improved. You know, obviously they probably still would have kept improving to an extent. I don't necessarily know if my weaknesses would have improved in such drastic amounts. I probably cut a minute off my mile time. I added probably like 6 or 7 muscle ups to my unbroken set. I couldn't do any strict. And then, you know, by the time the 2017 games roll around, because they were starting to implement strict muscle ups, they're starting to implement peg boards. There's a lot of practice on those. You know, I couldn't do any peg boards and I couldn't do any strict muscle ups. And that went from 0 to like 6 or 7 strict muscle ups. It went to, you know, 5 unbroken peg boards without hopping off the wall. So, I mean, everything definitely improved. But the most important thing was that I was healthy and I was pain free.
And so I'd love to highlight, you're also programming for yourself. You are in tune. You have an understanding of this, where many of the CrossFit athletes back in those days were defaulting to some form of online competition training with some dude up in his high tower that didn't know you. And then if you passed his training, you made his team. So like you were
pretty good Ponzi scheme. Pretty good Ponzi scheme.
That's a whole different podcast in itself. I just want to highlight
the Bavarian method there.
And so explain to me that learning experience. Now, in my mind, you were thinking like a coach and you were experimenting on yourself, the athlete. How has that prepared you now to work with many different athletes and remote? And I got a shout out to your Instagram because it's very educational. It shows you hitting these lifts and then infotaining us with the write-ups within the videos.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's kind of been a cumulative process, right? So, you know, I never intended on doing what I'm doing now. It just kind of like happened and, you know, kind of making like the business wasn't planned, like all this, you know, I wasn't planning on coaching people or working with people. It just so happens that from, like you said, learning and experimenting on myself to an extent. Like I was a personal trainer when I was younger, and informally I've worked with, probably been informally working with people and giving people tips and advice for quite a long time. And so in learning all of this stuff about myself, and I've had, like any athlete, lots of injuries, and I've never been someone who wanted to outsource that sort of deciding factor in my own performance, to where it forced me to learn the why behind what I was doing. It forced me to learn anatomy. It forced me to learn, different PT methods. It forced me to sort of informally learn all these things. It helps that, of course, I, know some people in the industry, and I have people that, I've had as resources to look out to or to reach out to. If I'm not completely sure about something, which is a lot of the time, I will speak to 10 different people that I know, and, taking everything with a grain of salt, take what I feel like is the common trend or the common thread that everyone seems to be kind of averaging out based on all their responses, and kind of implement something along those lines with what makes sense to me and my brain. So, in going through this whole process and going through that kind of training standpoint, or that kind of training process for myself leading up to the 2017 games, and before that, not to so subtly mention, all the powerlifting training and the benefits that come with completely getting into another discipline that is very, very much the opposite of CrossFit in terms of volume, frequency, intensity, and that sort of thing. It's given me a lot of insight into, people, how they move their bodies, their leverages, their limb length, what's realistic for them, what's not realistic for them. It's kind of helped me systemize and develop a way that whenever I work with someone, it helps me to identify the weakest link in their whole holistic process, that if they were to put their energy towards that thing, it would net them the greatest return, if that makes sense. So if you come to me and you're working with me and you say, hey man, like, I'm not sure if I should be supersetting my exercises or if I should be doing them horizontally. I don't know if my intensity is high enough. And I watch a video of you and you're training pretty hard and you're sweating and you're grunting. And I say, okay, well, how's your sleep? And you're like, oh, well, I only sleep 4 hours a night. I don't give a shit about your training. I don't care what you're doing in your training at that point, because no amount of fine tuning your training at that point is going to overcompensate for the fact that you're only sleeping 4 hours. Or if your protein intake is 90 grams a day and you're worried about, if you should do 120 kettlebell swings as opposed to 100, then I'm not concerned about that aspect of it. I'm concerned about the fact that you're only getting 90 grams of protein a day, because for the amount that you stand to gain from all of the cumulative effort that you're putting into this singular goal of improving your fitness, like, the amount of energy that if you were to bump your protein from like 90 grams to, if you were to double it to 180 grams, you could probably do half as many freaking kettlebell swings and make twice the progress, So a lot of people just are kind of ass backwards in their approach to things. And from, a lot of people don't like to hear this, but from a practical standpoint, the most amount of progress they stand to gain is oftentimes not in the areas that they think they are going to be making. Like, it's not in the area that they think they should be putting their effort in, right? Most people neglect stress management. Most people are way too chronically stressed all the time, and they don't understand how stress is an aggregate and it's cumulatively limiting their energy, to adapt, to make progress physically, to build new muscle tissue, to recover, to push your body into a high percentage of output, to, if you're an elite athlete, mind you, or even a little bit, even an intermediate athlete, to push your body into a point of intensity to elicit adaptation, you have to be able to put your body there in the first place. And you can't do that if you're overstressed and underslept.
How are you managing stress? I mean, how are you managing stress? Like, if you were encountering this in somebody you're training and you're working with, are you going through with like a questionnaire? Is it a Q&A mm-hmm. observation questions? And then, you taking that information, how are you making tweaks?
So someone, you know, say someone would sign up with me, they would fill out obviously a detailed questionnaire that at least gives me a starting point. And it's pretty detailed. And really the main things that I need to know personally are, what is your job? What is your family life like? Do you have a support system? What time are you going to bed at? What time are you waking up? And give me a realistic idea of your diet. Not a best case scenario of your diet, a realistic idea of your diet. Obviously, training comes into play because that's a stress also. But, you know, they'll give me all that information. And the first step is just awareness. You can't fix something that you don't know and that you're not aware of. Most people in their schedules have a certain room that they, without really changing their schedule, without really changing their existing responsibilities, there's a certain amount of cushion that when they're aware of what they need to be doing, they can push that a little bit. You know, whether it's the 30 minutes they're spending on their phone before bed, or whether it's, you know, the time here that they're wasting or the time there that they're wasting. Most people can squeeze a little bit more out of their life in terms of, if they're aware of, you know, areas that they're not managing their stress appropriately, or if they're aware of negative thought patterns, you can get quite a bit out of that. You can squeeze quite a bit out of that in terms of improving the outcome before you have to say like, yo, you need to start taking an extra day off from work or something like that. You know, so just like, you know, if I was working with you and you were to kind of give me an idea of your schedule and, you know, we get to talking more and you're kind of telling me, you know, that you're stressed about shit at home, or there's this thing that you've been putting off, or, you know, and notice we're not even talking about training. This is all holistic. This
well,
is
now
all
you're
lifestyle.
In the therapist. So now you become
yeah,
a therapist.
Exactly. And we're, you know, we're kind of delving a little bit into your mind and how you process information and psychology and that sort of thing. You know, it's really just a lot of it comes back to your mindset, right? So, if we're going to work together and you, I kind of lost my train of thought.
You were talking about like developing a mindset, like get into that a little bit. Is it, something where you're strategically, you know, focusing on different things to try to create a mindset, or is it something where you're just like, hey, fuck it, I'm going in the gym and just ripping these bars in half. Gotcha. I sometimes wonder, I mean, cause how old are you? 20?
I just turned 30 in August, so okay, my body's so, just starting to break down.
Yeah, so
don't say that.
I remember in my 20s being like, fuck, I didn't care what was on the bar, I was going to lift it. You know, and it's funny, I mean, shit, dude. Like, I remember just fucking absolutely just trying to destroy everything, and my mindset was just like nobody was going to outwork me. Nobody was going to be better than me. Nobody was going to do more than me. And at the end of the day, you know, like, you know, what is it? As you walk through the shadow of the valley of death, you know, be the baddest motherfucker. Like, that was always my mentality. So, but you build those blocks over the course of time of training, executing, and focusing in that. How do you take that? Like, if somebody comes to you that doesn't have that mentality, what roadblocks, what situations you put in place to help them build that?
Right. So when it comes to that, right, I think a key component of that is knowledge. And when I say knowledge, I'm talking, oh gosh, I have my my little terrorist is trying to get up here.
Aww. For our listeners, what Ian, what kind of dog is that? What kind of little
It's pup? A Belgian Malinois.
How old is he?
She's 10 weeks and she's my little fur terrorist.
Yeah, they're high motor dogs, to say the least.
She's actually pretty chill.
Belgian.
Yeah, she's pretty chill from the opinions of others that I've got that are knowledgeable.
Yeah. Our buddy Jeff Gonzalez just has, he is a beautiful little female that he brought in, and those dogs are, you know, been used for, you know, like the, for all the SEAL teams have, you know, used Belgians. They're pretty bitching dogs, super athletic.
Yeah, yeah, I'm excited with her. But sorry to digress. She had to jump up and make an appearance. But yeah, back to your question. So when we're kind of talking about that mindset, like communicating that to someone, I tend to, it all starts with knowledge, right? So if you don't have sort of a base understanding of how the body functions, then, you know, it makes it a lot easier to sort of push your governor, so to speak, to kind of like push your rev limiter, to kind of like constantly go hard, slam the bar. You have to make the weight every single day. You know, once you really get a little bit of, you know, obviously experience comes into play, but once you get like a good bit of knowledge in terms of physiology, in terms of like how the body functions in peaks and troughs, you know, how you understand sleep works, nutrition works, how you understand it all kind of ties in to sort of predispose you to be able to output higher forces and higher strength numbers at certain periods of time. And that, you know, when you understand that you're not necessarily supposed to be able to sustain those outputs or put those outputs out every single day, then it becomes a little bit easier from a mental component to realistically adjust your expectations for certain amount, like certain, you know, certain performances, if you will, certain workouts, right? So, you know, there's obviously purposes behind many different kinds of workouts, but like whenever I talk to most people, you know, and this is my conversation with a lot of CrossFit athletes, I've worked with a few CrossFit Games athletes, and my conversation with them is they're all, you know, they talk to me, they'll talk to me about their week, they'll talk to me about their workout, and they'll say, you know, all right, well, like these couple of days, these were really good. I really felt on fire these days. This day I was dragging ass, you know, and, you know, this day I was dragging ass, and I'm really, really frustrated because I really wanted to push it on those days. And I'll say, yo, like you're not meant to be able to go 110% every single day of the week. If you decide to, you know, burn your intense day on Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday, don't expect to output in that threshold. It's not realistic, right? So whenever I would talk to her, I'll say, you know, or him, I'll say, you know, typically rule of thumb, what I would say is give yourself 2 days a week that you allow yourself to go full force, full bore, full intensity, red line, whatever term you want to use, right? Give yourself 2 days a week that you want to do that. And I would space those days roughly at least, you know, 48 to 72 hours apart. You don't want to put them any sooner than that. You want at least 2 days between those days, right? So you have two really high intensity days. I would give yourself two moderate intensity days where you're still challenging yourself, but there's no massive pressure expectation to really go to that dark place. Those moderate days are still very productive training days. You can still be pushing weaknesses on those days if you want. And then give yourself 1 to 2 low intensity days. And that would be like, if you're a CrossFit athlete, that would be a day to come in and do like some bodybuilding or do some stuff to train some muscles or some movements that you don't normally train. Maybe you don't normally compete with. You know, some single joint isolation work, stuff to move, potentially a long duration aerobic steady state training session, you know, things like that. The key to kind of circle back around your question is really just teaching someone to understand that the body isn't meant to push heavy or high intensity or in those upper thresholds of their heart rate for extended periods of time and extended durations and extended reps and sets. You know, once you understand that, then it kind of starts to make sense. And that's how it kind of started to make sense for me. Once I understood that, then I was able to look back at my own training and I was able to sort of notice a pattern of, oh, that makes sense. You mean the day after I went balls to the wall and we trained for 6 hours, the 2 days after that, I was spent and my 60% of why my one rep max felt like my one rep max, but I didn't lift any weights that day. But it's all intensity. You know, it's all intensity. It's all, you know, to use a word that many people might not want to use, it's all part of your intrinsic vitality, so to speak. Those efforts take from you, and it takes a little while before you can get the ability back to do that, right? And so the longer we exist and the longer we've been on this planet, the longer it takes us to get a little bit of that vitality back to be able to put out those high efforts.
Two questions based off this. Number one, a lighthearted one. Is hypertrophy still a dirty word in the CrossFit community?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think that community, and I haven't been super submerged in it in the last year or two. I think that the CrossFit population audience as a whole has been kind of led around in a bunch of different directions with all of the changes and things that have kind of gone through there. So I don't know if they're as unified as they could be right now, but from what I've seen from a lot of fairly prominent athletes is that they're starting to understand that there is a benefit to, I might call it the symmetry that you can achieve from more hypertrophy style training, bodybuilding style training. Utilizing solely CrossFit movements, you can develop a pretty extremely athletic, you know, very high level physique, but there's just certain muscles that you don't hit in a certain way without the use, I believe, of some of those more isolation style movements, bodybuilding style movements. There's a lot of movements that you don't use in CrossFit competition that are still extremely beneficial to train on a regular basis. Now, whether those movements reinforce posture, whether they, a lot of them reinforce posture, whether they reinforce weak muscle groups that should be strong. You know, a lot of CrossFitters I know have heard that I know and that I've seen have, they get low back injuries because their butts are weak, because CrossFit is very quad dominant. And that was one of the large, changes that I made to my training, because I noticed that I was extremely quad dominant and my deadlift was not where it should have been in relation to my squat. There was actually a point where I learned what a glute ham raise was. And this was a while ago, though. This was like back in 2012 or 2013. I learned what a glute ham raise was. And I actually quit squatting for like a month or two while I pushed glute ham raises like 2 to 3 times a week. And I tested my squat at the beginning and it was like 450. And I went from not being able to do one rep of a glute ham raise at body weight to being able to do like 3 sets of 10, and I retested my squat max and it jumped up to 520. So just like there's so many ways that those kind of non-traditional CrossFit training methods can benefit an athlete in those competitive movements. Just, you know, whether it's upper back strength or whether it's, you know, postural or whether it's pull strength or their arm strength. A lot of times, you know, the only way, like once you've done a movement so many times, like a toes to bar, a muscle up, etc., you have to start to take a step back and sort of really, really dissect the movement and see how you can make it better and what you need to use to make that better. And oftentimes in breaking down that movement, you have to start to isolate the muscles involved in that movement. You know, I'll quote one of my athletes recently. She's getting ready for the Open and she's a pretty high level competitor. And I actually, while she was up in Canada and they were dealing with lockdowns and stuff, she was like, all right, well, I don't really have, you know, I'm not competing anytime soon, so I don't see the need to push all this conditioning right now. And I said, no, don't. You can bring your conditioning back in, you know, a month or two if you need to, because you're obviously not going to let it suffer that much. Your base training still has cardio and, you know, workouts in it. But I said, do a powerlifting block, you know, do a powerlifting block, do like a 8 to 12 week block, you know, keep some rowing, keep some biking, you know, keep a few of these modalities in there to maintain your aerobic capacity. But I said, do a strength block, see what happens. Do like a pure absolute strength block, because that's kind of one of the things she struggles with. She said, okay. And it was something I'd written for her, or not specifically for her, but something I'd written. And I do in my training personally, and in a lot of pretty much everyone's training that I do right, I include a very, very large amount of butt and back work, including the rear delts. And, you know, to quote some high level prominent strength athletes and people in the strength industry, there's a few muscles that you can't have too big or too strong, and that's your butt, back, and rear delts. And I'll stand by that as well. But in doing some of the training that she was following, you know, the powerlifting training I mentioned, or call it absolute strength training, whatever you want to call it, she went to go retest her muscle ups. And she goes, well, I just broke my PR by like 3 or 4 reps. And I was like, oh, why do you think? She's like, well, my back just felt insanely strong. And we've been doing, you know, variations of rows, dumbbell rows, chest supported rows, cable rows, et cetera. We've been doing rows 3 times a week, you know, for the last 8 to 12 weeks. Among deadlifts, you know, weighted pull-ups, all kinds of other back exercises. She's like, I don't remember the last time that I've done such a large amount of concentrated back accessory work that, you know, she said, I've never done that. And I said, huh, so it sounds like before your back was strong, but doing all the stuff that you've never done before, we just made it even stronger, and there was a huge carryover to your pulling strength in gymnastics. I mean, and weightlifting also. She saw it in the weightlifting too, just her ability to maintain posture through the different pulling positions and snatch and clean and jerk. But I think that a lot of to kind of answer your question in a very long-winded way, I think that there is a large portion of the community that's starting to kind of notice the benefits of training in these ways that may previously, you know, were seen as being non-traditional and non-beneficial. It's like we're all athletes along the spectrum, from endurance to pure strength to hypertrophy to everywhere and anywhere in between. And oftentimes it's the areas that you're not spending time at, the areas that you're lacking in that stand to sort of bring your whole machine to a new level, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and the follow-up here, what is the knowledge experience within that community? If we look at the wave of, I'll use college football as an example, it was a long time. We as coach, I'm pretending to be a college football coach, trying to protect what we do in the weight room. It's sacred, it's secret. And now we've seen the evolution where it's all on social media. It's all open. Me going to different conferences, strength coach conferences, they're up presenting and sharing, and it's very forward facing what they're doing within the weight room. Now it's on the football coaches to make these badass motherfuckers win. So is there a knowledge share among the coaches who are working with athletes, or there's still people trying to protect their secrets?
That's a good question, man. I think that if I had to answer that question, I would say for me personally, I think that if I were to guess, or if I were to make an educated guess, I would say it's been more organic as opposed to being official, like an official thing that's done. I would say it's been more organic via podcasts, and likely more so athletes looking on Instagram and seeing what other athletes they're doing that are beating them, and showing their coach and saying, hey, she's doing this, like, I want to do this. And, you know, people, I think certain athletes that kind of do a bit more of a well-rounded training program are starting to make that a little bit more public. And so a lot of people are kind of catching on, and I think it's a little bit more born out of competition and competitive desire and just a natural evolution, versus more of a more of a like a formal sharing of information for the sake of education or benefit.
I think what's happening, at least what I've noticed, is like the people that are really good at this stuff are never redlining. They're just their base level has reached such a high level that, like, you know, let's say their max heart rate is, let's say, I don't know, fucking 190, right? They're able to work at like 135, you know, 135, 140 beats at that 70-80%. And they're able to work in that zone for long periods of time, moving as fast as they can. Because you see like the difference. You'll see people that like redline, all of a sudden they come off and it's that huge endorphin deal and their eyes get big and they're fucking smashed. And then you see other people come off that are moving so fast and they jump off and they're like,
yawn.
Yeah, yawn. And it's really pretty interesting. I think the days of like the CrossFitter basically spiking into things have kind of died. And now the people that I've observed are just so efficient and their base level of conditioning is so high that they're able to put out such a high output. And then just kind of like, okay, on to the next one. Because as you know, like think about like you peak for a powerlifting meet, you hit that peak, all of a sudden you're tapped out for the next couple days. You know, and that far reaching could definitely puts you into a deficit. And what's amazing when you look at like, you know, a lot of the CrossFit comps and whatnot, you know, it's such a barrage and such a like a multitude of workouts of such, you know, mixed disciplines that if all of a sudden you're over there, you know, taking smelling salts and popping ephedrine and, you know, drinking a bunch of Red Bulls and howling at the moon, you know, going Latimer style, spit in my mouth.
Plates at the table.
Yeah, plates at the table. You only get one of those. And it's... you know, we figured this out years ago in our training where, you know, the training had to be real low heart rate. Like every day we went in there to train, there was like a super consistent deal. And whenever dudes would come in that were like drinking coffee and like, you know, hidden smelling salts and whatnot, I just knew they didn't have the ability. If you're taking smelling salts for practice, like that was a weird one. In training camp, you see dudes hitting that and I'm like, oh, fuck, you're not going to make it 6 weeks. Because you're overreaching into that bucket, which when you overreach, you know, now all of a sudden you're in a deficit. So the one thing that's been impressive with the CrossFit community is it feels like the base level of conditioning has reached such a point that if you're redlining for a workout, you are basically...
It's too late.
Yeah, it's too late. Like that was the one. I mean, I think CrossFit's really interesting. I think when it started, it was, and you kind of can subscribe to this a little bit, but it kind of started in this training. And then we just saw, when we saw the money and we saw the thing grow, all of a sudden now you get outliers. And you have a dude who's like, you know, Froning, for example, and Matt Frazier, who remind me of Homer Simpson in the boxing deal. You remember when those guys, when he gets in the boxing ring and the dude just basically punches him until he falls down?
You've got...
Right? And Homer just takes the shots and then he's the heavyweight champ.
I just remember him punching bag for Mo. And there's a fly that like flies and he punches the fly. And then it flies away. Yeah, like,
dude. Yeah. But like, that's kind of the deal where these guys can take so much volume and they don't really look like they're in those upper registers. And I wonder if there's like a training adaptation or if we're just seeing like a natural selection for these individuals. I mean, you see it in powerlifting where there's just, and the thing that's always trips me about powerlifting is there's always like some like weird 17, 18 year old kid in Iceland who's like 320 pounds that just squatted 800 pounds. And you're like, holy shit, look at the size. How old is that kid?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. And you know, he's only been training for a year.
Oh yeah. Like 3 months. He's like, yeah, I just picked this, you know, the Derek Woodski.
Is this supposed to be heavy?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the one thing that always trips about powerlifting is like, there's always some imaginary creature hiding in the woods to come out of people and remind you exactly how far evolution is pushing or de-evolution is pushing.
Neo.
Yeah, seriously. Like Jesse Burdick's great. He posts that What the Fuck Wednesday, and he'll post some shit, and I'll be like, "Fucking hell,
what the fuck?"
Yeah, like what is going on here? And I mean, even the CrossFit thing, man. Like, I think we got to the point where you're just seeing natural selection kick in, where now it's like, hey, you know, the days of like I'm going to go into my garage and secret squirrel some program and win the CrossFit Games. Fuck, man, you needed to be there in 2008, 2009 when I competed. Like, if you're doing it now. Like the capacity and the output that those guys are putting out consistently absolutely blows my mind. But if you see them, they're like, you know, hey, I did 100 toes to bar in a row and then they get off and they're like, next one. And you're like, holy shit, I'd be dead for a week if I had to do 100 toes to bar. Just the eccentric load would have fucking killed me.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Well, I think you're very right. You're very much right that it has naturally selected for a certain body size and a certain body type.
And you're way too big.
I'm way too heavy.
Yeah.
And
you know, I was the largest dude to ever compete in the CrossFit Games. 308 really? Pounds. Yeah, 6'6", 308 pounds.
I'm sure that's Ian's number two.
And the next dude was 175.
What, Ian, did they do weigh-ins, like, in the programs?
There's no, I wish they did.
Well, the problem is all those girls would go in there and be like, there'd be a bunch of girls that were 108 and then a bunch of girls that were like 180. And they'd be like, ugh. I'll tell you, though, it's kind of like and this is no dig on the guys, but I find the CrossFit girls are way more impressive than the CrossFit dudes.
Yeah, for sure.
I played in the NFL where dudes never lifted weights and still were 4% body fat and fucking shredded. I've never in my life seen like the level of muscularity and like conditioning and just shape that the girls that do CrossFit are. I mean, like, you can throw the drug conversation into it, but I mean, for the most part, like, some really physical improvements in females, I've never seen anything like it.
The interesting thing to me when it comes to the girl side of things is how the level of strength and muscularity they can possess while still being able to function to a high degree with regard to endurance and gymnastics, right? Mm-hmm. Because for me, that was always my struggle. I never really worried about being strong because I had a strength surplus, but I almost had enough strength to where I didn't need it. I didn't need a 600 squat, you know, in no way do I think that helped me. I just had it. And in maintaining my work capacity, you know, lifting however long, because I would, you know, squat one time, you know, once a week. I just wanted to make sure that a squat workout wouldn't wreck me. I wasn't necessarily trying to get strong, right? So, you know, the level of strength and muscularity and, you know, the numbers they can put up on the strength numbers on you know, lifts nowadays, Olympic lifts, you know, squat, bench, CrossFit total, all the ways they express that, you know, while still being able to hang in terms of, you know, running a mile, rowing, you know, unbroken sets of muscle ups, it's like, it kind of almost seems like it defies the laws of physics, because I know, you know, being a stronger guy, it was like the guys that were excelling at muscle ups were the lighter guys, you know, the smaller guys, the guys that you would obviously look at them, you know, and say physically, like, okay, it makes sense that you can float up above the rings easier. It makes sense that you're running a 5-minute mile. You know, it makes sense that you're not, you know, that you're not winning the CrossFit total per se. You know, it was a little bit more like easy to spot. Whereas the girls' side, it's not at all. I see girls that are huge that are, you know, killing it in terms of gymnastics and endurance and that sort of thing. And, you know, in reference to what you're saying before, as far as, you know, it selecting people, I think that one of the main, one of the large players and key players in that is the fact that there's only so many movements that are measurable that they can test to include in the competition that, you know, when someone's been doing this for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, however many years a lot of these elite athletes have been doing it, that they've developed, not only is their base level of conditioning extremely high, not only are they physically built in a way that is advantageous to do these movements compared to other people, you know, being around that stockier height, that 5'8 to 5'10 height, but they've developed such a level of movement proficiency and efficiency at these movements to where their base aerobic capacity is here. And the amount of energy it takes to do these movements has gone from here to here. So they basically turned all these movements that before were anaerobic movements, they're now purely aerobic movements. So to them, you know, doing some of these movements is akin to what running would be like to somebody else. Sure. You know, their strength is just at that sweet spot to where these prescribed weights that they're giving them in the games are, you know, more cardiovascularly taxing than anaerobically, like muscularly taxing. And the easy way to offset all of that is to up the RX working weights for the athletes. But, you know, I don't think they would ever do that, because then that would drive the athletes to do more drugs. And then, you know, and that's, I don't think that's the look they're going for. I don't think that's the type of, you know, competition they necessarily want to attract, you know, and that's a whole nother issue. You drive up the RX, you know, you drive up the working weights, it's going to offset that, and the athletes are going to have to adapt and evolve. And, you know, human physiology only allows for one to reach so far. And so that presents a whole nother challenges that the athletes are, you know, then forced to meet when you have $350,000 or however many dollars are on the line these days.
Sure.
Do you feel that money changed that and then brought the maybe some more in motivated athletes?
Dude, as soon as you add money into the pile, and that's when shit gets serious. Now, yeah. All of a sudden people look at it and think, okay, hey, there's something online. When things are just for like glory and for recreation, like, you know, like, you know, put like a charity 5K, right? But then all of a sudden they're like, winner gets $1,000. All of a sudden some dude who runs, move, you know, a fucking 15-minute 5K comes out and is like, shit, I'll roll out of bed and bang this out for $1,000. Then he goes out and hammers it. So I think when you start adding money into the mix.
Did 2008 have some cash?
Yeah, I think so.
Or is it just free T-shirt?
I think it was a free T-shirt and just a fucking slaughter fest and a bunch of dirt. It sucked. That was a terrible fucking idea.
It's money and just the overall scope of things. The fact that, you know, the fact that it's so large now that winning the CrossFit Games can literally make you, you know, it can make you. And if you're smart with that, you know, and how social media works, you can use that to basically catapult, you know, a six-figure salary for a very long time. You know, a lot of athletes would assume that risk any day. That's the simplicity of it. You know, that's about how simple it is in my eyes for a lot of those guys. When I've been around them, I've competed around them, I've seen quite a bit of stuff. So
I would not say that choir boys. I mean, unless it got to the point where they were like in the NFL where they were testing every 2 weeks, you know, I mean, shit, I got tested 24 times a year.
Maybe but even then, man, even then, like, it's, you know, and I can't speak to it now because obviously the transfer of ownership and, you know, all the changes that have taken place in that realm over the last year or two. But back when it was like traditional, you know, ran by the people that it used to be run by, like, it was a business and it was arguable if the same standards were applied to all of the athletes or not.
Fuck no. Come on, let's be fucking honest in this. Like, I mean, they weren't going to unseat their champions.
Yeah.
I think they get into it and it's like, you know, the best have to be the best. And, you know, if you're not on, I guess, within the realm of who they want, then it's easier to, you know, make some sacrificial lambs and curb stomp some people. Yeah. Yeah.
Poor Ricky.
Yeah. What was the guy that got tested positive?
Rick. It was Ricky Garrard. He kind of came out of nowhere and he wasn't a Reebok athlete.
Yeah.
He wasn't, you know, and I think he came on third, I think, a few years back. And then, you know, they kind of used him as the sacrificial lamb. And like, that was kind of almost sad to see. Like most gen pop would see that and they would kind of see what, you know, what the kind of propaganda wanted them to see. But like having been an athlete and kind of knowing how things work on the back end, it was kind of almost sad to see like them using him as an example. He's like 20 years old or like 23 years old. He's a freaking kid, man. Like, and you know, he's now going to be tainted by that whole ordeal, you know, standing on the podium, like vacating his spot for another guy who's probably doing the same shit, you know, but they liked him a little bit more.
Well, I mean, hopefully with the change in ownership and, Glassman exodus and Eric Rosa, who's actually a pretty stand-up dude from everything I've read, maybe they bring a certain level of, I don't know.
Fairness.
Maybe. Like a standard, like some form of like unilateral fairness where, you know, everybody's kind of treated in the same deal. I mean, it's like, I mean, think about the Olympics. I mean, Carl, you know, Ben Johnson test positive, Carl Lewis tested positive at the same time, and nobody ever heard about that. So they they burned Ben Johnson at the stake, but Carl Lewis also tested positive.
Because he's a Canadian.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't like the goalie. He's a Charlie Francis guy, and those guys did not like Charlie at all.
I'm actually really, really excited to see. I'm really excited to see the direction they take things in. Because if there was one thing that made me personally sad was when they took away regionals. And I think a lot of people kind of felt the same way just because of what I believe the integral role that that competition played in terms of the community, like that. That was like
they couldn't afford it. It was purely a financial decision. So
I know
for all the money CrossFit made, they were better than anybody I've ever seen about burning cash. I mean, they must have had 300 people on staff. I mean, Glassman had his own personal like art curators. I mean, just fucking ridiculousness. And the financial implications for the regionals became too overbearing. And it was purely a financial decision. So that's when they went into these regional competitions. So I think a lot of the moves that they made were because of just not managing their money very well. And they exorbitant, you know, media teams. And just, you know, when a company gets really big like that, there just becomes this endless amount of red tape and bloat and people that are just, you know, and their deal was never to run lean. And then all of a sudden they start running into some money deal. They cut regionals. They cut the media team. I mean, these were not existential moves made because Glassman had some fucking vision of some free market libertarian business. These were purely financial decisions because they were fucking basically spending themselves insolvent. So like regionals, the shit, like they should go back to that format. Unfortunately, they won't, because I think this idea of actually like having sanctioned events and then letting these individuals run them has probably done a really good job of basically allowing really high-end business people that know how to run these events come in and put on some really amazing deal. Like, well, when I
shout out Luke Espy, the freaking Mid-Atlantic Challenge, Callie and I participated in the first one as CrossFit DuPont, but then dudes evolved and it's now a internationally known event.
Yeah, like Wadapalooza and all these crazy
that's
events.
A fun, have you done that one, Ian?
I did Wadapalooza probably. I competed in that competition probably 4 or 5 times.
The pictures always look awesome. Amazing.
You what?
Yeah, the pictures always look amazing.
Yeah, the venues, it's almost outgrowing the venue. They're almost kind of, they've been maxing out. It's almost like depending on the year, there have been some years that have been busier than others just due to numerous variables at play. But they've pretty much, from what I can see, have maxed out that venue in terms of like the square footage of the space they have to occupy, and the guests that they can kind of tolerate there, and, you know, the events that they can put on, et cetera. But it was very well done. I did it a few years individually, and then I did it probably a couple years on a team, but like it kind of made sense, the proximity, the proximity to where I lived. But it's been
You live in downtown Miami? Like, where do you live?
Right now, I live in Midtown, which is like maybe 10 to 15 minutes north of downtown.
Yeah, I used to live in South Beach.
Oh, okay, cool.
Right on 17th and James.
Okay, yeah. So, I've been down there for a couple of years.
My first rookie year, my rookie year in the NFL, I moved down to Tampa. And I lived in Tampa for about 5 years. And 1 year, I went down and rented a place in South Beach. And lived there for about 3 months and then fucking hightailed it out of there.
One of my favorite bars in the country is the Clevelander.
Oh, yeah. I've stayed at that hotel many a time.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say Space or God, what were all those crazy ass bars you went to?
We did about 10 years ago. Shit, did a lacrosse tournament. So we got the band back together for my team.
Oh, nice.
Went down to Miami for a weekend.
Clevelander.
Forgot there were games. Just we were having too much fun on South Beach.
To this day, Tony Gonzalez's favorite spot is Mangos. Like, I remember every time
the two tiers in the
stage? Where like all the Latin girls wear all like the crazy outfits and they sell those drinks. Like, we used to like as soon as we would go down, like we would go stay down there, we'd go for Model Week or whatever it was. First place we'd always have to pay was Mangos.
Model Week, whatever.
Yeah. Well, back before you, there were all these dime pieces just posting on Instagram, you actually had to go to places that you knew that really hot chicks were going to be at, like Fashion Week, Model Week, like all of these different kind of like events that you would go to.
Playboy Mansion,
Vegas, the 50th anniversary of Playboy magazine, which I was at. I mean, all of these things were where you went. Now it's like, you can just open up Instagram and all of a sudden, like, look at these dime pieces, you know, like Paul Carter. I mean, that guy gets hit up, what, like 300 times a day by all these dime pieces looking to figure out how to do more glute training.
Mm. Well, they don't have to go appear in public now to make money. They can do it from their Instagram account or their OnlyFans account, and they can make $100,000 a month. And why would you go stay up until 3 a.m. and get gawked out when you can do it from your phone?
Hey Tex, how is your fans only account going?
My fans only.
Is it only fans or fans only?
No, only fan. That's how Luke and I text. Is just we continue to support each other that way, emotionally, financially.
10 cents a day. Don't worry, bro. I got you.
It's so funny. That whole dynamic. A buddy of mine is a pretty strong power lifter. He competes in April. And the other day he was squatting and he was doing some absurd weight for a certain number of reps. He was probably doing like 750 for a triple or something in like one of his working sets. And one of these girls came up in the gym and like walked by, and it was one of the girls that runs one of these like million follower accounts and makes a ton of money and looks absolutely nothing in real life like what she does in her photos. And she walked by, and apparently she said his squats looked rough, and it got back to him. And it probably, like, I've never seen him so flustered and annoyed that one of these OnlyFans girls said that his like very clean 750 pound squats looked rough.
He's obviously a big prima donna of some no name girl who basically gets paid money to post for so I still can't even figure I know we discussed this fans only thing, but I'm like, so are they naked pictures? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, aren't those all over the internet for free? And they're like, yeah. But then she talks to him. I'm like on social, like I just couldn't wrap my head around it. I'm like, what?
It's like internet peep show, basically.
It just seems, I don't know, dude. This whole thing. I mean, I keep hoping this experiment, the internet, just goes away, like pockets and zippers and all these experiments. You know, who knows?
Did you when you were in Miami? Did you enjoy your time in Miami?
Yeah, I had one of the best times. I had this dope apartment, condo. I had a badass twin turbo Porsche. Had my little pit bull, and we just hung out. When I went over and banged some weights every day, and then we'd go get lunch. And then I ended up meeting up with all these, I could say they were rich because they were spending a lot of money. But the interesting thing was that I didn't know what anybody did for a living. That was the weirdest part about Miami for me. I knew what I did for a living, and I knew this was my off season, so I had time off. These people, I don't know what the fuck they did, but they was like, we used to just, and it was like, hey, it was Mint, and then this place, and like every night there was a different place to go. And like, it was bottle service and tables, and these girls were smoke shows. And like, it was just, it was a really fun 3 months. So I went down there in like a January, and right around.
How did that affect your training?
It fucked my training. But then I remember I hightailed it back to Tampa in right around my birthday, end of March. And we hit it fucking full go. And I remember Ruiz was like, we got a lot of work to do. So, yeah, it was a good time, though. I definitely enjoy my time in Miami anytime I get to go. I don't even know if the restaurant's still there, but there was this cool restaurant we used to go to called Tantric, where every food, like every meal was some like Tantric thing. And, man, they had the fucking craziest drinks.
I don't venture into the realm of South Beach usually if I don't have to.
it's a weird place. Prime 112, which I would imagine still there, is still one of my favorite restaurants.
You know what is there that I'll go to is the Russian and Turkish bathhouse.
Oh, nice, where they beat you with those big reeds of
with the bush. They have the
burning. What's the bush? Is it like eucalyptus leaves? Like they have these big things and they kind of like smoking, burning, and they beat you with them.
You'll go into the Russian Schwitz, and it's probably like 200 plus degrees in there, and they have you, it's hot just being in there, but they take the bushes, and when you wave them around in the air, they get even hotter, and they hit you with them, and it's like your skin's like 300 or 400 degrees. Somehow it feels kind of good, and like makes your skin all red because of all the blood flow and everything. I don't know, but yeah, that's a place that me and my buddy will venture to whenever we've beat our bodies to a pulp and we need to just like go sous vide in the steam room.
It's a good way of putting it. You're like a sous vide, yeah. I mean, they're like the interesting thing about Miami is it's in the United States, but it's not the United States.
No,
it's just kind of a different world, man. I really enjoyed my time when I was there, and there's just like, and it's a really interesting piece because there's such a big swath of like haves, you know, like people are living on these like, you know, epic places, and people that have money, and then there's like people that have nothing. So it's just, it's a really, it was cool, and I always dug the Art Deco, and every time we've ever been down there, so it's a fun place. But Tampa was actually a lot. I'll tell you this, per capita, and you probably know this, there were probably more good-looking girls in Tampa than any place I'd ever lived in my entire life. Like
Like Tampa.
Dude, it was crazy. Like, we'd go out places, and I'd, like, look around, and I'd be like, dude, any one of these girls in Orange County would be the hottest chickens on the street.
Gasparilla.
Yeah, like, it was unreal. Like, I had never in my life, that's why I lived down there 5 years. And it was...
Well, I get it.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Like, to this day, like, if I ever had to move back to Florida, I would live in Tampa. I loved it there. I had a great experience.
I'm in Clearwater right now.
Oh, nice. Where are you? I used to live in Safety Harbor.
Okay. It's like kind of right up north by the Dunedin Causeway.
Oh, yeah. If you want to cross the, like the, like the causeway, like you're headed to Clearwater from Tampa, you know, and there's, what's the name of that restaurant that's right in the middle. But yeah, as you get over there, and I can't remember what that causeway is called.
Gulf to Bay?
Yeah, the Gulf to Bay Causeway. So right at that first exit, you make the right turn, and then that's Safety Harbor back there. And I used to live right back there. Yeah. My neighbor was David Wells.
I've been in Miami for 2 years now, and I'm contemplating making the move over this way just because I got this crazy terrorist of a dog, and she wants a little bit more than concrete and sidewalks and stuff. And I know some people over here, a lot of the strength community over here, fitness community, know some gyms to train at. My mom lives over here, my brother lives over here. Like, I'm kind of coming to the point in my life where I think I'm going to enjoy a little bit more space and a little bit more of a rural environment, the ability to like get out in the woods.
Miami's interesting, man. It's like one of those places that like you feel like you're in like a really interesting, like it felt like you were in Brazil or some form of third world, you know, not third world, but it just doesn't feel like the United States.
And, I've been to quite a bit of places in South America, and it feels a lot to me like Buenos Aires in Argentina.
Oh, yeah,
that's like what Argentina. It feels like to me.
Yeah,
the culture, the, you know, the people, the vibe, like just the overall sort of hustle and bustle, and you know, everybody's kind of mannerisms and persona and stuff. That's what it kind of feels like to me. It's just for me, it's just too crowded. It's just become too crowded. Like, there's a lot of pros to it, and there's some cons to it, but at the end of the day, like, I'm at the point where I'm on the verge of needing to go back to my roots.
Nice. So you don't own a gym, you just kind of run in traveling samurai, just training at different people's spots?
Yeah. I mean, I've just having lived here my whole life, I probably know in any major city, you know, multiple gym owners, and just from competing in CrossFit, competing in powerlifting now. And, you know, I was training at the location of the company I used to work with, and I've kind of switched, and, you know, I train at a couple different places in Miami. I'll come over to Tampa. I know Ben Pikulski, I train at MI40 quite a bit. I know a guy that, you know, pretty much know all of the main gym owners in the area. I know gym owners in Sarasota, you know, Orlando, Gainesville, Jacksonville, you know, so it's like, I pretty much have a place to train wherever I go. And, you know, from a business standpoint, I think I'm going to try to like at least for now, pulling the trigger on a physical space is just something that I don't know if I could justify. I think it would be fun and I'd enjoy it and it would be cool to like make my own space, but it's too unpredictable right now, in my opinion. I personally feel like it's too unpredictable right now. And I think there are ways in a business standpoint that I feel like I could capitalize more before I were to open a physical space. There's other things on the to-do list that I would do before I open a physical space.
On online, I checked out you had fortitude training and you introduced four concepts and you went into some detail on your Instagram. I would love the opportunity for you to present those to our listeners. So what are these four concepts that you bring to your fortitude training?
So that goes very much in line with what I mentioned earlier. It's sort of how I work with people. I try to dumb it down because, you know, most people are very busy. Most people that come to work with me, I mean, even the athletes, like everyone exists along the same spectrum of health and fitness. You know, it's just to what degree of rigidity they want to apply to their life to kind of help them get further, you know, further or not in terms of their goals. You know, whenever I work with people, it's stress, it's sleep, it's diet, it's, you know, your genetics and or hormones, it's training, it's, you know, mindset. It's those key pillars that you can make as simple or as complex as you want to make them. And more often than not, you know, the areas, like I mentioned, the areas that people are focusing on, that people are trying to push and excel are, you know, the areas that they don't necessarily stand so much to gain it, you know. And if I work with someone on training, like, you know, and they stand to benefit more from a lifestyle component, well, then I'm going to coach them on that lifestyle component before we even talk about training. You know, if I'm working with someone on nutrition, but their training sucks and they're not even, you know, their intensity is garbage, their frequency is too low, their volume's too low, like they could be a nutrition client of mine, and I'm going to, before I really start pushing nutritional interventions, I'm going to say, yo, like, this isn't going to work unless you're doing at least to this degree of training. So when it comes to fortitude, you know, I think for me, the best way to describe that, to answer your question, is just to say it's practical. You know, and I think I put that in my description in the website. It's practical in a sense that we're going to be touching on the biggest bang for your buck ways that you can improve. You know, I don't like to, you know, from a business sense, I'm not so concerned about selling people and retaining people that I feel the need to, you know, keep telling them what they want to hear versus what they need to hear. And, you know, it might lose me a couple clients here and there, but I think at the end of the day, that's one of the reasons why a lot of people do stick around, is because they respect me for that. And just being honest with them, you know, I'm not going to tell somebody to keep doing this one thing that they want to hear if it's not the area that they're going to stand to benefit, because, you know, then I'm wasting their time. I'm wasting my time. And, you know, then I'm just a glorified cheerleader at that point.
And you highlighted that all of your clients are one-on-one. Is that intentional? Have you experimented with group training or programming for the masses and just like one-on-one, or you want to give everything you got to your individuals?
So I have three services. One is a one-on-one coaching oriented situation that's primarily training focused. And usually most of the people that do that level of one-on-one, where we're talking on like a daily basis, it's really just they want that level of customization. I still go into nutrition a little bit with those people, but I'm not more so monitoring the nitty gritty details of how much they're eating and what they're eating, but I'm more so like making sure, like, you know, I'll remind them about guidelines that we want to stay in. That's kind of like my most in-depth service. Then the nutrition coaching is kind of like a moderate kind of moderate, you know, middle price point. Like, you know, that's for someone if they want me to sort of look in depth in terms of what they're eating, how much they're eating, their goals are a little bit more nutrition oriented. They have training down pat, whatever, you know, that's the type of person I'd work with on nutrition. And then I do offer a lower price point service that is, you know, if someone maybe if they're, you know, budget college student or they don't necessarily want, you know, someone to hold their hand through the training, they're maybe pretty experienced or they just want to, you know, try my methods or try kind of how I would train somebody. That would be, you know, my style, so to speak. I talked a little bit about that previously. I do offer a couple of templates in a training service through my website. And that's just a simple, small subscription. But I have two programs under that service. One is a powerlifting program. It's continuously running. So it's constantly being updated. I think there's probably like six or seven, whatever, six times four, seven times four, 24 to 28 total weeks in it right now. If you were current on it, there's another one. The very first one that I dropped is called Fortitude 365. And that's pretty much like a Gen Pop person's kind of 365 day year training program. That's going to touch on strength training. It's going to touch on bodybuilding. It's going to touch on GPP. It's basically for someone who is looking to kind of get a little bit of everything, who maybe only has 1 to 2 hours to train. So I'm not going to put a lot of exercises in that 365 program that aren't going to be very good bang for your buck. I'm not going to be putting something in there that takes a really long time to warm up for, you know, because most people are on time constraints and they're trying to go to the gym to, you know, do the most effective training session they can go in and do and get out because they have to go pick their kids up from school or they have to, you know, go back to work from their lunch break, that sort of thing. You know, so my 365 program, I don't put a lot of Olympic weightlifting in it just because in terms of ROI for your time, I don't think that, you know, most people, most Gen Pop people, I don't think they stand to benefit from, you know, from doing five sets of one snatches in 20 minutes as they do from doing, you know, five sets of 10 bent over barbell rows or, you know, squats or, you know, cable rows or pull-ups or, you know, bench press or something like that. The time under tension and the hypertrophic benefit that they would get from one of those exercises that they take through full range of motion, full time under tension, from a strength and hypertrophy standpoint and an aesthetic standpoint, because let's not discount that. Most people just want to go in the gym so they can look good and feel better about themselves. And I think more power to them. So, you know, that's going to be, you know, more of the emphasis in there as opposed to like a sports specific. I'll probably drop a weightlifting program in the future, but kind of not at that point yet. I'll probably drop CrossFit before I drop weightlifting. So kind of the training service is going to be encompassing a variety of programs, and I have two now. I just haven't really felt, you know, the need to drop the third yet, but it's coming. I'll probably drop the CrossFit one pretty soon, kind of in time for the open.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Where do you see the future of fitness and training in general? Not necessarily the sport of fitness, but how about garage gym explosions, people leaving the Globo gyms for taking ownership of their movement?
Sure. I see boutique gyms being pretty popular. I think we've already kind of seen commercial gyms take a very large hit. Didn't Gold's Gym go out of business?
Bankrupt. I don't know.
Bankrupt.
About.
Yeah. I mean, I want to say each location is probably like their franchises. And I know because the Gold's Gym around us, I canceled my membership just because I had it. Because I remember before we built Power Athlete, I would train there. And I just kept it because it was, I think, on a credit card I didn't necessarily notice. And I canceled.
Great business model.
Yeah. I canceled before the pandemic. And they, like, didn't charge me because I think they suspended everything. But when it started back up, they started charging me again. So I went in there and I was like, hey, you guys sent me the collection on something. And here's my proof of cancellation. And the guy behind the desk is like, yeah, it got sold off to new ownership. And there was all these people that hadn't paid. So they just batched them. And I was like, so you're batching people that have canceled? And he's like, yeah, they pretty much batched everybody for the year. If you had a membership there at Jan 1, they batched you. And I was like, ooh, that's bad. He's like, yeah, it's bad for business. So needless to say, they went away. But he said they were under new ownership, which makes me believe that they're probably franchises.
Yeah. But, yeah. Yeah. So. I know that, you know, depending on what state you live in, commercial gyms have taken quite a hit. And I think the more local.
How's it in Florida? How's it in Florida with Florida being as open as it is? Did they take a hit?
I don't think it's been that bad here. I've gone to an LA Fitness several times, and there's been people in there. It's like, it's pretty much, you wouldn't have think there was any, like, there's obviously some signs that say like wear masks and stuff. For the most part, like, you know, the times that I've been in, it's been a little, it hasn't been packed. It's been like kind of moderate. You know, most people aren't wearing masks. Most people, you know, some people are, but most people are just kind of like minding their own business and doing their thing. And it's pretty quiet. The one that I've been to kind of around here in the Clearwater area, it's been pretty relaxed, pretty chill. You know, Miami's a little bit, Miami kind of does its own thing. The gyms I've gone to in Miami are always pretty packed, but they weren't like large chain gyms. They've been, you know, I think the local gyms that have a little bit more of, I don't know if I would call it like a cult following, but more of like a local attached following that have been going there for a while. I think those will be fine because those people, you know, the tie is strong enough to kind of keep those people coming back, and they have memories there and they have friends there. And it's kind of their, it's as much a social outlet as it is, you know, place to train. There's that social attachment there. And I think that kind of attachment and that tie will help a lot of those locations prevail. But for the gyms that there isn't that kind of social attachment, in my opinion, you know, it's just maybe someone going there by, you know, a lot of individuals going there by themselves. They don't necessarily talk. There isn't necessarily that aspect of community. You know, the large commercial gyms, I think those are going to be the ones that are taking a hit. You know, but you have so many people with garage gyms now. So, you know, that's obviously going to be something that I think is going to stay more prevalent, but at least, you know, people have the option to use their garage gyms now. But I still think, you know, ironically, for the amount of people that have, you know, garage equipment now and the ability to train at home, I still see a lot of those people, potentially a good portion, a portion that's significant enough to note. I see a lot of those people still gravitating towards like a semi-private or a small group or like a boutique gym or, you know, a gym that is a little bit more local where they know everyone. Because for a lot of people, that's their kind of hangout. That's their outlet. That's kind of their place to go, you know, hang out and train, and catch up with people and like do their thing and kind of get around and group up with like-minded individuals.
Do you remember the movie Pain and Gain? With Marky Mark and The Rock?
Yeah, it was awful.
I thought it was awesome.
Dude.
I thought it was great, man. I thought it was great.
Really bad.
Thinking about that local place where everybody gets together and then schemes crimes. That's what
you think, Miami? That's actually everywhere in Miami. That's everywhere in Miami.
Yeah. Yeah, that's everywhere in Miami. That's everywhere.
Yeah, that's, God, I'll tell you, man, the one of my favorites, there was just so much interesting food in Miami.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like you know, like it's like here in Austin, like you know, you venture downtown, you're gonna find something interesting. So, but yeah, just yeah, dude, really a lot of fun. So, hey, if people want to learn more about what you're doing and just, you know, catch up with you, I know you got a YouTube page and you know, Instagram and whatnot. Like, how do people get in connection with you?
Probably the best way would be just through my personal Instagram, which is at Ian the Rhino. There's some dots in there, but
how'd you get the name Ian the Rhino?
Yo, this is actually a funny story.
Did you give it to yourself?
Yes.
No, did you start referring to yourself as the fucking rhino?
No, I Rich actually gave it to me.
Oh, okay.
We were out training in Cookeville, and this was the 2016 season. So this was like where I still had quite a bit of weaknesses. I was probably running like a 7.5 minute mile, which, you know, around CrossFit Games athletes is very, very, very low on the totem pole. And we hadn't gone and competed yet. We were up there at Tennessee Tech running around the track. And the workout was we had to run a 5K, which I couldn't remember the last time I had run a 5K, mind you. And it was every, it was our team and it was their team. And at the time, I think it was like him and his cousin and the other guy. It was him, Darren, and I don't know if Darren was on the team. No, it was him, Matt Hewitt, and I think James Hobart. And then the girls that they had on the team, like Ellie and a couple other ones. And we were running a 5K, but it was a two, it was continuous. And it was a 200 meter slow jog paired with a 200 meter sprint.
It's called 5,000 meters. That's called an Indian run where you basically sprint. Yeah. It's fucking awful.
And for me, it wasn't so much my cardiovascular capacity. It was my calves. So about, I don't know, a mile in, my calves were literally just blown to shit. And my cardio was fine, but like this was the most embarrassing workout of my life. I was having, especially cause it was like with Rich and Company, and like we had went there to kind of like show up and like put out, you know, and we're running around this track, and like towards the end of the 5K, I got laughed a couple of times because I was sprinting on the 200, but I was having to walk for the first half of the slow 200 because I had to like let my calves, like the lactic acid and blood, drain out of them. They didn't have that kind of muscular endurance yet to like handle that impact. And so everyone laps me, everyone finishes, and I'm finishing the last lap, and they're all like chilling in the end zone on the football field. And I'm walking across the end zone, like diagonally across the field, just me by myself. And it was a pretty hot day out, so we were all pretty sweaty. We were all looking pretty big and vascular and stuff. And Rich goes, "Is that Ian?" Because they looked at me coming from across the field. He goes, "Geez, he looks like a freaking rhino." And ever since then, my teammates, they just call me that. They called me that, like, funny, like making fun of me. And then it kind of became this sort of endearing term because – we actually ran sprints after that, and they said, "Everybody, don't go super hard or you'll pull a hamstring." And of course, me and like four guys went super hard and pulled our hamstrings. Aww. And we went back to his dad's house after that, and they did a workout, and I couldn't do it because I had a pulled hamstring. So I was strict pressing 275. And he goes, "Is he strict pressing 275? And Pierre goes, my teammate, he's like, "Yeah, bro, he's pretty strong. He's strict pressing 275. And he's like, "That's like my jerk max right now." I was at least able to, carry my ego along a little bit with some of my lifts.
Totally redeem yourself.
Man, sounds like some fucking amazing conversation going over in the Froning gym.
One seminar, they hosted us, so we got to go.
Yeah, with their dad. We
drink
met his
beers
dad.
With his dad, yeah.
Yeah, the dad and his
big Coors Light guy.
Oh, is he really? Silver Bullet, he and Glassman. Ooh, God.
Yeah, that was actually the first time I met Matt Frazier. He just randomly showed up. And we were just like, it was kind of odd because I was still like a little bit of I was kind of this younger, like not super like self-confident CrossFitter. And then all of a sudden I'm here at Rich's house and Matt Frazier shows up and we're like shooting guns in his backyard. And I'm like, what am I even doing here right now?
Sounds like some good redneck shit.
Well, that's fucking cooking.
This guy's got some redneck. Well, we've done, I mean, shit, we've done a bunch of seminars.
The final CrossFit SSA football seminar was held at
Final Ass Backwards.
The Mayhem.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But they want to find me. They can find me at Instagram at Ian the Rhino. Easiest way to contact me is just shoot me a DM. I respond to all my DMs. No matter how weird they are, and they get pretty weird.
Challenge accepted, Power Athlete Nation.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have said that, Ian.
Yeah, time to get weird. You just fucking ask for the fucking reins to come down on you.
Oh, God. Yeah, I guess I ought to know.
Awesome.
But I usually, because it's convenient, I usually end up sending voice memos to people. Otherwise, I'm staring at my phone and getting cross-eyed too much.
Yeah,
I found that voice memos are the best level of efficiency possible.
Ian, we have a troll, the Power Athlete Penguin.
Penguino.
He's going after you now. You've opened the floodgates.
Yeah.
Wellborn's blocked him.
You blocked him too.
Troll back.
I unblocked him.
Oh, you unblocked him because it was too good?
No, he was paying me respect, so I got to get that ego boost. I need this, okay?
Dude, the fact that you're hoping that the penguin, a.k.a. the Penguino, is fucking, that's your validation?
Yeah.
That's, oh, God.
This is what my life's come to.
All right.
Athlete Nation. Ian, thank you very much for taking the time to join us, man. Enjoy clear water. It is a beautiful place.
Yeah, no, it's a bitchin' place, man. I love that spot.
And if you're ever in the,
guys, thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, man. If you're ever in Austin, Texas, man, we got plenty of weights for you to lift.
Yeah.
I'd love to come by at some point. One of my buddies lives out there. I was out there, I think, recently when I reached out to John. My buddy's out there doing jujitsu now, so nice. I have to come out and get my ass kicked.
Where's he working at?
Brazilian Fight Factory.
Where's that? Is that downtown?
You know, I'm not so familiar with the geography that I could give you an accurate guess, but it's where there's a couple of brothers that train out of there, William and Andrew Tackett. They're kind of like phenoms in the jiu-jitsu. They're really good.
Nice.
And God, what is his name? The name of the guy that runs it is escaping me. I feel like an asshole now because he's going to listen to this and I'm going to forgot his name, but Brazilian Fight Factory. Cool. It's a Czech mat gym.
Oh, cool. One of the Jean-Jacques Muchado gyms, Todd White spots up the street from us. So I'm
okay.
supposed to,
yeah,
supposed
yeah.
to,
and
I'm
I just,
to go out
I
there
just
and start, and I've been putting it off.
Yeah, I just bought a Christensen Arms 6.5 Creedmoor.
Oh,
and
nice.
So I'll be can't exactly find too many long range spots around here to shoot that.
Man,
so if I come out there, I'd be bringing that.
Man, like I'm thinking there's this place, I think it's called the Austin Gun Club, that has they have a range, but it's like you got to join. I think you just can't show up there. You got to be part of the member, but they have a legitimate out to 1,000.
Yeah,
which is pretty cool.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, if you got a 6.5 Creedmoor, I mean, that there's no problem with those shooting 1,000. Now, I remember when I shot my 308 out to 1,000, it was something like 48 feet of drop or something. Like it was so many clicks, I was like, holy shit, I might not have enough clicks to get this thing.
For the record, Brazilian Fight Factory is up north in the Domain.
Oh, okay.
So shout out to them. We'll have to check them out.
Awesome.
360-183.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, cool, man. Thanks, brother. I'll see you soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Adios, guys.
Bye.
Now it's time for you to empower your performance. If you're interested in checking out some of Ian's training, you can follow him at his nickname. That's Ian the Rhino. Until next time, bye.